through the lead column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Inside. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hitting Season. This is episode number 491. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And we've got a busy week this week. I've got a lot of interviews coming up about the trade deadline, and we're going to do two midweek shows here for you this week. And the first of which, I'll be having lead prospect writer for Fangraphs, Eric Longenhagen, on the show this week. We're going to talk about the Phil's draft picks from a couple of weeks ago, but we're also going to get his thoughts, and it's a very interesting conversation that I'm sure we're going to have. I want to get his thoughts about what he thinks of the Phillies farm system as they prepare to potentially move some prospects and trades. Are there any prospects he thinks could be on the move, and what do they need to do as an organization in order to really get better? And I think we're talking about the development side of things. So we're going to talk to Eric Longenhagen about all that coming up in just a few minutes. Plus, I'll give you the rundown as of Wednesday evening on some of the big trade deadline moves already being made around Major League Baseball. Nothing cooking for the Phillies as of this recording, and it looked like they had a deal in place, but no deal. In fact, it went down, and so a lot of bad blood, it seems, between the Phillies and Pirates after the Tyler Anderson trade got nixed. And also, the Phillies game on Wednesday night against the Nationals gets postponed, made up as part of a doubleheader on Thursday because of a COVID outbreak with the Washington Nationals. So we are not done with this disease just yet. So lots to get to here on this episode of the podcast. But just a reminder, folks, to make sure you check out the Hittin' Season Patreon, where we've got a lot of extra cool stuff going on over there. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. And don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Tell them to hit us up with a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else it is they get their podcasts. And so let's jump into the latest Phil's rumors on here on Wednesday night. And again, this time of year, this week, any podcast is going to be dated pretty quickly here. So make sure you scoop all this up on Thursday morning because stuff is likely to change. Of course, we all know by now the Phillies deal for Tyler Anderson, a low-end number 4, high-end number 5 starter from the Pittsburgh Pirates, did not go through after the Pirates had some kind of concern with the medicals of one of the Phillies relief pitchers that was supposed to be going over there. Now, I've seen some of the reporting that there are some maybe in the Phillies organization that believe the Pirates are making too much out of that and really just wanted an excuse to kind of shop the Tyler Anderson deal around to other teams. And it doesn't seem like they gave the Phillies a chance to swap that player out for anybody else and instead sent Tyler Anderson over to the Seattle Mariners. And that's a deal that would have been a lot like the Jason Vargas trade a couple of years ago. Similar statistics, similar type of pitcher profilers. Tyler Anderson a little bit younger than Vargas was at that time, but he would have certainly been better than Matt Moore or Chase Anderson or Spencer Howard or Vince Velasquez at the back of the rotation. The Phillies' back of the rotation is a sucking chest wound right now, and they need a tourniquet. They need to stop the bleeding. Tyler Anderson would have helped to do that. He would have been a tourniquet of sorts, but not the type of acquisition that really would push this team really into going on any kind of a potential run. He would not be somebody that you bring in to change the mix of the clubhouse or anything like that. He'd be a guy that you'd get in there that you know is going to give you 5 to 6 innings every fifth day. They may not be spectacular innings, but they are innings nonetheless, which is more than you can say for Matt Moore, Chase Anderson, Spencer Howard, or Vince Velasquez at this point. So kind of a shame the deal went through. It didn't seem like the Phillies were going to miss what they were going to give up in terms of minor league prospects, and so now the Phillies are still looking for starting rotation help. I know the name Michael Pineda has been thrown out there. They certainly do not seem to be shopping at the top of the starting pitching market. So we're not talking about Max Scherzer. He's not coming to Philadelphia. The rumors are Max Scherzer wants to play out west, so you're looking at Dodgers, Giants, or Padres. Like, we need those teams to get any better. But he's likely to go out there. Maybe he goes to an American League West team. Maybe the Houston Astros come calling. Maybe the Oakland A's have been aggressive. We'll get to the Oakland A's in just a second. Maybe they come calling, but it certainly does not sound like he's coming to a National League East team anytime soon. And so what you have with the Phillies right now is they're trying to get a low-end number 5 starter, number 4 starter, somebody to give them a little bit of depth. And it sounds like it doesn't really sound like they're in the market for one of the high-end closers like Craig Kimbrel, like Raisiel Iglesias, if the Reds are even selling right now. If I'm the Reds, I don't know that I would be selling in the National League Central at this point. But you've also got, you know, we're talking about guys like Ryan Tepera now are some of the names that are being bandied about. I know Richard Rodriguez was a very hot name just a couple of days ago. There was some rumors and whispers about Rafael Marchand going to Pittsburgh in a deal for Richard Rodriguez. But after things went south with Tyler Anderson, I'm not so sure these two teams are going to hook up on a deal at this point. So there is no real smoke to anything major with the Phillies. Now, at this time of year, the Phillies typically are locked up tighter than Fort Knox. They don't leak. You don't hear stuff trickle out. If it's coming out, it's coming from the agents of players who are dealing with the Phillies, and that information is coming from John Heyman or Jeff Passan or Buster Olney, one of the national guys. It's not coming from the Phillies organization. And again, unless Jim Salisbury tweets it, or really one of the other Phillies beats that, you know, you've come to trust at this point, you just take all these different rumors with a grain of salt. But as of right now, nothing really big cooking on the Phillies front. But that does not mean teams around Major League Baseball have not been busy. We have gotten off to a pretty early start here this week. The trade deadline is 4 o'clock Eastern time on Friday. And as of this recording, again, Wednesday night still, more than 36 hours until the trade deadline rolls around. And we all know prices come down as you get closer to the trade deadline. So it sure does look like we are going to see a flurry of activity as teams try and improve themselves here. Just on Wednesday alone, a number of big deals went down. One of the more fascinating deals was the Marlins-A's trade. Starling Marte going from the Marlins to the A's. I know he was a guy that a lot of Phillies fans were hoping Dave Dombrowski would be able to go get and put in center field. But the A's give up a young left-handed starting pitching. I don't know if he's a prospect anymore because he's pitched in the big leagues a number of times the last couple of years. I think he's kind of got the similar type of time in the majors that Spencer Howard has. So again, I don't think he's considered a true prospect anymore, but a young left-hander with a lot of talent who has struggled at the big league level in Jesus Luzardo. A straight up one-for-one trade. These types of trades, you just don't see them anymore. The A's give up a controllable young left-handed starter who has the potential to be a top-flight electric starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, and I think he's under team control through 2026. So the A's give that guy away, and in return get a two-month rental, but one of the best center fielders in Major League Baseball in Starling Marte. He's going to make the A's a more serious contender in the American League West and for the American League wild card. So you just don't see these one-on-ones anymore. They're always fast. You know, these you see two different philosophies here. You see a Marlins team that's trying to acquire as many long-term assets as they can get their hands on. And what an electric rotation they would have if they can get everybody healthy and if they can get everybody straightened out. The Marlins could be real beasts in the next 2 years if they can do that, if they can get Sixto Sanchez healthy and, you know, they can get Jesus Luzardo figured out. They've got so many other really good pitchers on that roster that you worry about facing a team like that, if you're the Phillies or anybody else, if they can get those guys straightened out. But again, you're relying on player development and you're relying on your scouts to make that happen. The Marlins have a track record of getting young guys to play well. And with Starling Marte going to the A's, that could be a big needle mover in the American League West and certainly with the American League wild card. So a fascinating trade there on Wednesday. Cincinnati acquires Michael Givens. So again, I don't think they're trading away Raisiel Iglesias because they are adding here at the trade deadline. Michael Givens goes from Colorado to Cincinnati. So he helps them out quite a bit. Arizona trades Eduardo Escobar to the Milwaukee Brewers. So the Brewers trying to strengthen their offense up a little bit by getting a good player in Escobar. Miami also makes another deal, trading Yimi Garcia to the Houston Astros. And then the big blockbuster of the day on Wednesday, and it seems as though as I'm recording this on Wednesday night, the deal is changing a little bit, but it's just some of the prospects are changing hands are a little bit different. But Joey Gallo goes from the Texas Rangers to the New York Yankees, and he's going to have to shave off that beard. You can't have a goatee when you're playing for the New York Yankees. But Joey Gallo, I mean, when we came into the season, surely everyone knew that power power hitters would be the Yankees' weak point. They would need to go out and grab a power hitter at the trade deadline. Really is amazing that this Yankees team really did need a left-handed power hitter. They did not have one, and now they go out and they get one of the best pure power hitters, one of the best pure sluggers in the game in Joey Gallo. And Gallo is not just a lumbering outfielder. He does provide some serious glove work. He's one of the better defenders in Major League Baseball, which is a kind of an interesting combination. He's a low batting average, high strikeout, but high walk, high home run guy that plays really good defense. A valuable piece that should help the Yankees as they try to stay in the thick of the American League East race and stay in the thick of the American League Wild Card race. The American League races are a little bit different. In the National League, those NL West teams are really kind of dominating at this point. But in the American League, it's not quite that way. So looking at the wild card standings over in the AL, you've got Tampa Bay with a 4-game lead over the Oakland A's, but the Oakland A's have a 2-game lead for that second spot over Seattle and a 3-game lead over the New York Yankees, a 4.5-game lead over the Toronto Blue Jays. So, it's kind of, I guess, if you want to include Toronto, that's 4.5 back. I think you can do that. Cleveland's 5 out, probably about as far as you want to go, but you know, Toronto with a plus 85 run differential, I think they're more legitimate than Cleveland with a negative 28. Nevertheless, you've probably got 5 teams for 2 spots there, and right now the Yankees are in the thick of that. He should help them overtake a Seattle team that is pretty ticked off. I mean, they went out and they traded Kendall Graveman, their lights-out closer, to their in-division rival Houston Astros. You talk about a move that infuriated the clubhouse. It's hard to fathom that when you're this close to a wild card that you would go out and you would trade away one of the best closers in the American League to a division rival who you're competing with for the American League West. That doesn't make any sense at all. Jerry DePoto had a mutinous locker room on his hands after making that deal. So some fascinating trades here so far this week as the trade deadline draws closer. And I'm sure we're going to see more deals on Thursday and probably a flurry of deals on Friday. My gut feeling is that with Dave Dombrowski, I just don't see them pulling off a major deal. I don't see them going out and getting Chris Bryant. I don't see them getting Craig Kimbrell. I don't see a move like that coming for this team. I see more moves like we've seen. And I know we've heard the Phillies willing to go over the luxury tax. We've heard that. I don't think the Phillies have done a good enough job on the field this past week to convince John Middleton that he should go over the luxury tax. If the Phillies don't go over the luxury tax, the players have only themselves to blame for it. I mean, I would blame John Middleton too, because I don't see any reason not to go over the luxury tax as a fan whose money, it is not mine, that is getting thrown around to pay different players. But the tax does not hurt you if it's just for 1 year, and you can get back under the tax next year so you're not paying penalties of draft picks and more severe penalties after going over this year. So I think the Phillies should go over the luxury tax for sure and go out and get some real help. But when you're talking about adding like a guy like Tyler Anderson, and if you're talking about going and getting a couple of middle reliever guys, those are moves aimed at keeping you under the luxury tax. Those are moves that are not aimed at taking you over and really making a big impact. You're then relying on the guys you already have, the guys who have been doing it for the last 3 years, to suddenly turn it around. And I just doesn't seem to me like that's a good strategy. But it might be the strategy the Phillies are about to partake. But we'll see. Dave Dombrowski is a guy who has swung deals in the past, and we'll see what he does. I'm not anticipating a big thing here over the next couple of days. But one other quick note, and that is, you know, the Phillies did not play on Wednesday night against the Washington Nationals. A COVID outbreak, and as from the reporting that we've seen, I believe from Ken Rosenthal, is that the majority of the players and staff, 12 people, 4 players and 8 members of the coaching staff and or other traveling staff, tested positive for COVID. Now, Trey Turner, we understand, was not vaccinated, but most of the rest of the folks were vaccinated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I think I've seen in other places that the J&J vaccine appears to be a little bit more susceptible to the Delta variant. But, who knows? You know, I don't even think the CDC knows at this point. Anybody knows exactly, you know, how this virus is working, except to say that if you get the vaccine, you're in much better shape than people who don't get the vaccine. So, but in this case, with all the contact tracing tests that were going on, the Washington Nationals and Phillies game had to be postponed on Wednesday. It'll be made up as part of a doubleheader on Thursday. So as you're listening to this podcast, one of those games is probably happening right now as we speak. But let's move on. In just a minute after the break, we're going to talk to good friend of the podcast, Fangraph's Eric Longenhagen, about the Phil's draft from a couple of weeks ago and what the farm system looks like as this week rolls along. Do the Phillies have anything in the farm system that could interest other teams, and should they move them? We'll get into all that stuff coming up next here on Hittin' Season. Well, joining us to talk about some of the draft picks the Phillies made just a couple of weeks ago, and also just a real quick look at the state of the farm system as the trade deadline hurtles towards us every day, is Eric Longenhagen, the fantastic lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs. You, of course, follow him on Twitter at Longenhagen. Eric, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right, John. How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. It's good to talk to you again. I'm glad to hear you're back out and about and, you know, getting out to see some minor league guys. I want to talk to you about, just real briefly, you know, before we after we talk about some of the draft picks, you know, about the farm system, just as in terms of prospects the Phillies might have to deal away here. But we haven't talked a lot on this podcast anyway about the draft picks that the Phillies made a couple of weeks ago, with the exception, I think, of maybe the first round pick, Andrew Painter. But I want to get your thoughts on another high school pitcher the Phillies take in the first round of the draft. They obviously went in the same direction with Mick Abel last year. I know Mick Abel seems to be doing pretty well in the minor league system this year for Philadelphia. Now with Andrew Painter, obviously they pick him at number 13, so it's another high school pitching prospect. And I know a lot of times high school pitching prospects, of all the different things you could pick in the draft, these are kind of the most volatile. What did you think of Andrew Painter as the Phil's first round pick?
Yeah, we had Painter ranked in the 20s. You know, he signed a little bit under slot, but probably still pretty close to the slot value there at their pick. You know, he's pretty much like a typical best high school arm in a class. Like, if you just had a very average draft class, like, this is what the best high school arm in that draft class typically looks like. It's a giant framed kid with present arm strength and a real breaking ball. And the track record for guys who are already on the bigger, more physically mature end is kind of mixed, right? Like, we've had Tyler Colek go high and Riley Pint go high, and Forrest Whitley has sort of yo-yoed physically. Forrest Whitley's actually a pretty good body delivery comp for Andrew Painter. Then Whitley, you know, like, dropped a bunch of weight, was in great shape for a while, and then became maybe the best pitching prospect on the planet before injuries and other stuff started to occur. Any high school arm, any high school player, but especially the arms that you draft, is going to have a longer developmental timeline. And with pitchers, that's just one more Tommy John Russian roulette spin, you know, like, it's just an extra year of rolling the dice that someone's elbow or shoulder is going to break. So, you know, like, they did a lot of high schoolers in this draft. They're not all going to make it, but, you know, there's just attrition in this demographic. Mm-hmm. But Painter is absolutely, like, just in your stock, like, this is the best high school arm in a given draft. He does look like that. We had, you know, a free-type prospect in this year's draft with Jackson Jogue, whose pitch data is – well, it's on the chart, but it's hot very high on the chart in an exceptional way. But otherwise, yeah, like, Painter was, I thought, the next best high school arm in the class.
Is there anybody in and around that area that you think the Phillies might have been better served in taking in that spot? I mean, obviously, there were a couple of players that fell into the teens that it seemed as though that maybe the Phillies could go ahead and snap up, but it seems like they really had their eye on this kid.
Yeah, you know, I think that we have Khalil Watson is just a top 100 overall prospect for us, but he had a $5 million price tag. They would have had to have mortgaged other parts of their draft to have gotten him done at that price tag. It's not clear that the Marlins are going to get a deal done here a few days ahead of the signing deadline. So Cleo Watson is a more talented player who's on the board, but there are other reasons that perhaps they passed on him. Gunnar Hoglund, who the Blue Jays took at 19, he just had Tommy John. He had Tommy John during the spring.
Right.
I don't care. Like, if anything, you're kind of getting it out of the way. He was only throwing in the low 90s while he was just preceding Tommy John. He might have been dinged already and still performing in the SEC, living 90-92. You take the opportunity during rehab to rework that guy's body, and maybe he comes out of rehab throwing harder. He's got a plus slider. He's got 7 command. Like, just absolutely going to race to the big leagues and give the Phillies a dose of what they need, which is reinforcement in the rotation. I love Gunnar Hoglund. I thought in totally healthy that he goes in the top 10, and I just don't ding TJ guys quite as much as the industry seemed to in this particular instance.
Well, let's move on to the second round pick. Outfielder Ethan Wilson, the Phillies took in the second round at number 49, left-handed hitter. He's a guy who has been kind of morphing from a slugger type profile to a contact hitter profile. Ranked as one of the better college hitters in the draft class, correct? And I know he signed for right at slot. So when you're talking about the fact that Phillies, went and they got Painter for a little bit under slot, they gave Wilson exactly the money, pretty much exactly where it was supposed to be here with their second round pick.
Yeah, we actually had Wilson ranked one spot ahead of Painter on the board. If people are interested in checking out our pre-draft rankings or where any of these guys fit in the Phillies farm system, just go to the Fangraphs prospect page and page through the board.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson's high probability corner outfield stick, like really well-rounded mix of contact and power. I think he's going to move fast, and at least to me, looks like a guy who plays like a significant role. The larger half of a corner outfield platoon, like what Matt Joyce was during his peak years, guys like Beth Smith and, Josh Reddick, like this is the Ethan Wilson archetype. So yeah, I think he's going to be a quick moving big league role playing piece, which is about as well as you can hope to do when you're picking there in the middle of the second round at about pick 60 or so, or, whatever it was that's a good outcome. So, I thought that was a good get for them, and perhaps partially facilitated by Painter being a little bit under slot, although that has more to do with some of the other high schoolers who signed.
Yeah.
And just like the up-the-middle guys from the college ranks buoying up ahead of Wilson, guys who don't have as much thump, are a little bit more one-note offensively, but play second base or somewhere up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of college guys slid up ahead of Wilson into the comp and early second round.
Moving on to the third round, and actually the Phillies with three of their first four picks went high school, and in this case they went and they got Jordan Vyers, who's a high school outfielder. I was noting a tweet from Matt Winkleman who noted that Vyers was number 403 on Baseball America's list and that he wasn't on anyone else's list. What's your profile on this kid? Obviously third rounder, we're starting to move down to a part in the draft where nobody's a guarantee to make the big leagues, but still a pretty high pick for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he signed for $750,000. At Fangraphs, we did, 75 guys ranked, and then if players were drafted who we did work on, who we felt needed to be added to the pro list, then we just add them. So Jordan Vyers is on there. He's 31st in the system right now. He was young for the class. He was barely 18 on draft day. He's physical at about 6'4", short to the ball, but has strength-driven power. Going to be in a corner outfield. It's just an interesting, well-rounded mix of, again, contact power. There's body projection. There's not huge athleticism or explosiveness here. It's more of other stuff going on related to his age, probably buoyed him in the model. Maybe not because it's a Texas high school kid. The level of varsity competition that he saw reinforces confidence in his field to hit that some of the cold weather climates would not. So I thought that I think he's the third best prospect that they picked in this draft. But I thought that, for $750,000, that this guy seems about right for a guy like this.
All right, and then another high school arm in the fourth rounder. Their first two pitching, the first two draft picks that were pitchers that they took in this draft were both high school pitchers. Micah Ottenbright from Michigan, fastball 90 to 94 for the most part. Seems to have a decent breaking ball, decent changeup. I think the thought is he's a guy who can be a starter, but kind of a little bit of a long way to go for him. What's your take on Ottenbright there in the fourth round?
Yep, this is the guy who I think is the third best prospect that they picked. Hmm. He's, for a Michigan high school pitcher, for him to have nascent feel for three pitches already, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah,
and he's big, 6'4", 190. He's got room on the body. He's really loose and fluid. I really like his chances of being a starter because of the ease of the delivery, the quality of the strikes with the fastball. The pitch mix is already pretty deep, or at least it's viably deep for a starter. We're not talking about a guy with three impact pitches already, otherwise he would have gone in the first round. But, like, yeah, I think that this is a really nice developmental piece that I'm excited to see what they can do with. I think that his chances of velocity is the easiest thing to develop in our game right now.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the main missing component for this kid. And he's got all the underlying traits that would indicate that that's going to occur, barring injury. So I'm pretty excited about Mike Ottenbright.
Couple more guys I want to ask you about. Let's go to the fifth round pick. This is a college pitcher out of Virginia, Griff McGarry. It's the first college pitcher here at this point. Is this a guy who can who's going to hit the majors at some point in the next couple of years, or is this kind of still a pretty much a wild card when he's going in the fifth round here?
Yeah, I mean, McGarry is raw. He's one of these guys who, I don't know how the University of Virginia keeps doing this, but like, they recruit well. They often end up getting guys either from outside their region. Griff McGarry's from Northern California, I think. And or they get guys to matriculate to school early and forego the draft as a senior altogether. And like, guys go there and they don't really get any better. So McGarry is one of them who, he's like 6'93 to 96. He'll show you 97, 99. Like, that is the area where he will peak on occasion. Mm-hmm. Plus changeup, plus breaking ball, and just has no feel, just zero command. just sort of languished away, trying to labor through starters innings at Virginia. They're just not great at developing pitchers there, and yet somehow seem to collect good high school pitching prospects consistently. So, velocity is the easy thing to develop. Command, maybe not. You see some of these teams like Cleveland. Cleveland barely took any college pitchers who threw over 92. They are just hope they have all the other components. They have command and a well-demarcated pitch mix, and they're going to try to develop velocity like they did with Shane Bieber and Aaron Savali, and like, they have a track record of doing this. McGarry's got big stuff, and it's just very, very raw for a college arm. So I have him projected as a reliever, but there's real ceiling here because the stuff is so good.
Last guy I wanted to ask you about is the sixth round pick. And this is actually a kid who is a close relative of a coworker of mine, I found out the other day. And they're very excited about joining the Phillies organization. Jose Pena Jr., high school right-handed pitcher. Saw a scouting report, 6'3". He can get up to about 95, 96 miles an hour at times. Do you have any kind of a scouting report on this kid other than that?
He's a real physical kid with a hell of an arm. For a high school kid, this is a buff young man. There's not a lot of room left on the body here, but he's already throwing hard. For him, it's going to be about finding the secondary stuff. And in all likelihood, he finds one. Like, can the Phillies get him to find one major league out pitch, one major league breaking ball? And if he can do that, then, yeah, you're looking at a good relief prospect here. But for the most part, at 220K, this is an arm strength flyer. But again, like, enough that he's on the bottom, towards the bottom of the Phillies list on the site. I dig him enough to stick him on there. And then honestly, like, Logan Cerny, who they took in the 10th round out of Troy, another dude with real tools, can really run. TJ Rumfield in the 12th round out of Virginia Tech. Again, really physical lefty stick, first baseman at Virginia Tech. Was originally at Texas A&M or Texas Tech. It was one of those big 12 schools where he wasn't getting any playing time and then transferred and had the pandemic in there. So not a long track record of performance for him, but definitely has big lefty power, major league body. So I thought this was one of the more interesting and deeper drafts. I think that as most of the teams across baseball leaned heavy on college guys because, A, there were so many of them because of the five-round draft the year before, and then, B, just because ultimately data, Uber Alice for a lot of these teams now, specifically regarding the pitching, teams need pitching depth. Like, there are just a lot of factors that push teams toward the college players and specifically towards the college pitchers. And the Phillies kind of zigged while everybody else zagged here, and I thought that they ended up with some good value because they did that.
Well, let me talk to you real quick. We'll shift to the Phillies' current farm system, and especially as we're looking at it in terms of the trade deadline, which is just a few days away. You know, there's a lot of folks, and I think I've probably been one of them, that have talked about the Phillies' lack of a deep farm system to the point of being able to go out and get top quality players in trades at this point. And, you know, that might still be true because it sounds like the Phillies don't have any interest in moving Mick Abel or Bryson Stott at this point. They're two best prospects. And obviously there are some younger players that have been on the big league roster like Spencer Howard, but are kind of back and forth between the big leagues and AAA at this point. Still more prospect than major league starter or whatever, although he's not a prospect anymore. But as you look at the Phillies farm system and some of the guys who have been, who after not playing any minor league ball in 2020 have gotten some time in here in 2021, are there some guys who have impressed enough to the point that you could see the Phillies and other teams, I guess, more to the point, looking at them and saying, you know what, yeah, this is a guy that we'd like to target from the Phillies farm system at this point?
I think they certainly have guys like that. Does it make sense for the Phillies to move them? That's the thing I'm less sure about. Like, I don't think this is an actual contending team. I think it would be kind of short-sighted for them to go out and do a whole heck of a lot in terms of trading away guys who have really progressed this year, who they think can be like long-term pieces for them. I think that what you saw them try to do with Pittsburgh and Tyler Anderson feels okay to me, that like Abraham Gutierrez has great contact and walk peripherals. He's at a position that they have a lot of organizational depth. If you like Logan Ohapi more, if you like Rafael Marchand more, if you think that any of the other like Husky young catchers are real prospects, I like Rodolfo Duran as a backup. Like, it's not a huge bummer to part with Abraham Gutierrez. And then Christian Hernandez is in the lower levels but has to be added to the 40-man this offseason and then clearly has something medical going on too. Like, to fortify your rotation with somebody by trading a couple guys like that, that feels okay. But if someone was really – like, if Johan Rojas was crushing it right now or if Ihosuar Garcia was crushing it right now, like, I wouldn't be moving any of those guys. But they're not, you know. Like, Eric Miller – It's been kind of a struggle to develop players in this system for a while now.
Yes, it has.
So, you know, it's tough. I think that if anything, they're in a position where when you look at who they have coming up that they want to add to the 40 man, maybe Luis Garcia, who's coming due here, is the only must add that they have, and everybody else who's like Rule 5 40 man roster timeline comes due in December is like James MacArthur, who hasn't played well, Hylan Ortiz, who teams have passed on in the Rule 5 in the past, Ethan Lindau, Gutierrez, who we mentioned, Kevin Gowdy, who's resurgent a little bit, Hernandez, who we mentioned, and then Rodolfo Duran, who has also been passed over in previous Rule 5 drafts. So if anything, I think that as a lot of teams like the Rays, the Twins, especially now that they added two more pieces in the Nelly Cruz deal, the Brewers maybe a little bit, the Dodgers. There are a bunch of teams who have like an overage of guys. Their 40-man is full of good players already, and there are a bunch of prospects whose timelines are coming due. The Phillies are in position to like take some of those guys on, and you're still helping the team in the short term in 2022, and you're not selling any pieces away. Like, I just don't think the Phillies are actual contenders. Folks got to remember, like, Tony Gonsolin couldn't make the Dodgers playoff rotation last year. Jose Alvarado is the Phillies setup man. He couldn't make the Rays playoff roster last year.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Ranger Suarez would just be pitching low leverage middle innings for any real championship team.
Yep.
I understand that, you know, the lineup is deep for sure, and that if Aaron Nola is right, that he and Wheeler can go toe-to-toe with any two guys. But the rest of the team, the defense and the bullpen especially, like, it's not real. So I know that the standings say what they do and that everyone's instincts are to buy, and I fear that Dave Dombrowski's will be too, because they always seem to be. He's done this for like 20 years. And the dude got more World Series rings than I'll probably ever have, right? But, like, I don't know. I think that there's a way to add to this window by being the ones who are opportunistic. Like, the Giants have a contender on their hands just because they took guys off the scrap heap of teams in exactly the way I'm describing.
Hmm.
Guys who can't find opportunities, who are getting pushed off rosters elsewhere, just make up most of the Giants lineup. And, you know, I think that with really, again, only Luis Garcia is the guy who it's like, all right, we got to add someone to the 40-man who seems like a slam dunk, and it's Garcia, but they've got 8 free agents coming off the 40-man. And I think they should use some of that space to scoop up, you know, the Rays traded 2 good long-term pieces for a couple months in Nelly Cruz, in part because the Rays just have so many guys. Like,
yeah.
They paid a premium because it didn't sting. And I think that's the type of thing the Phillies should be trying to take advantage of right now, rather than being focused on buying sexy big leaguers.
Very interesting. That's definitely a different take on this than I was thinking. But, you know, I think we all oftentimes we look at the trade deadline as which established major league players can the Phillies go get. And you look at like a Tyler Anderson, and you look at all the relievers they got last year, and you look at the Drew Smileys and the Jason Vargases of a couple seasons ago, and Jose Bautista and Justin Bors and all that kind of stuff. That's definitely a different way of looking at it. I wish I trusted the Phillies' ability to identify those types of players and to pick out the right ones. And I think that's where I get a little bit concerned. It seems like every offseason they try to go out and they try to find some of these scrap heap guys. You know, I think of like the Kyle Garlicks of the world and some of the other non-roster invitees that they bring aboard during the offseason that just so rarely seem to work out for them. I wonder if they have the talent evaluators and the scouts out there that are able to properly identify guys like that.
Yeah, I think when you look at the players who are the most amazing and impactful success stories like that, whether it's the Dodgers guys, basically it's Max Muncy.
Yeah.
It's Chris Taylor.
Yeah.
Right. And often with Justin Turner, often there's a change. There's something that they see about those players.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't obvious, and they've changed it. And the three guys we're talking about specifically, like, their swings changed. None of them have the same swing as one another.
Right.
There's something about the Dodgers' ability to not only identify, but to develop even some of these older guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that that's the piece. I think that, like, you know, is the driveline hitting stuff? Like, just because it says driveline doesn't necessarily mean it's good. Ultimately, like, these people on their own have to implement and succeed with these techniques. And I'm just not sure that the driveline hitting stuff is working the way I'm sure that the pitching stuff has been working.
Yeah.
It's different. It's totally different. They're not the same. Even if people are coming from under the same banner there. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. I think that there's a dev issue here, I think.
Yeah, I agree,
like,
totally.
Francisco Morales has real stuff. Like, Francisco Morales, wouldn't you just want a guy like that in the bullpen right now if you were really throwing fire with a plus-plus slider
mm-hmm.
in Redding? Even if he wasn't throwing strikes, he could just be in the bullpen. And there's just not – that doesn't seem – I don't know. Like, that seemed like a pretty reasonable outcome to hope for or maybe even expect – for
yeah.
this year already. I mean, again, the guy was put on the 40 man, and we're just not getting there. So,
hmm.
so yeah, I, it, to me, my instincts are, and I'm not on the Phillies backfield consistently like I am all the Arizona backfields, where I can really see, like, oh, this is a disaster, you know?
Yeah.
The energy on certain backfields is just,
yeah,
you can see it going sour. So I don't really know, but my just from observing the way the flow of players and stagnant progress in this farm system, it strikes me as a developmental issue more so than an evaluation one.
Well, that's a huge problem that this team has to figure out, and I know it's one of the things Dombrowski wanted to figure out when he first got here. But this team really isn't going to have the kind of success they want to have without figuring out that development thing. I want to ask you about one other player real quick before I let you go. You mentioned him a few minutes ago. Hylan Ortiz is an international guy they signed for $4 million a few years ago, and I think everybody had all but forgotten about him because it just looked like he wasn't going to make enough contact in order to take advantage of that power. He's hitting for a lot of power right now in single A, to the point where it feels like a call up to Redding should be coming pretty soon. Where are you on Hylan Ortiz at this point as a Phillies prospect? Is this are we getting a glimpse of someone he could be, or is this a guy who's maybe taking advantage finally of competition he's been seeing for a little while now?
I think that what you've touched on there is possible. Ultimately, it's a first base DH only guy who for his minor league career is striking out at like roughly 30% clip. So
yeah, not great.
Track record of guys like that is not great.
Yeah.
And you know, if I'm ballparking outcomes here, it's like, oh, Christian Walker with the Diamondbacks was this guy too, right? Different kind of physical entity. Hylan Ortiz is basically the size of Jose Abreu already, and he has been since he was 18.
Yeah.
And so what's Hylan Ortiz mobility going to be like when he's 26? Like, I don't know, but could this guy be like a pre-arb slugger who you keep around and he, you know, hits fifth or sixth in your order, and he's a lower OBP guy, but he has 30 bombs for a couple years? Yeah. I think that's in play. I think, you know, like what Justin Bour was and what Christian Walker has been and mm-hmm. what Jesus Aguilar has kind of been. Like, that's all the same kind of bucket of player, a low-end, everyday first baseman type of guy who, you know, maybe by the time he hits his ARB years, you're looking to upgrade, but is better than a replacement-level player. So mm-hmm. I think that would be – that's what I'm hoping for if I'm the Phils, is that this guy can just be a role player – who he's gonna maybe for fantasy players, if he's gonna hit like 30 bombs, the power to do that is there, then he's more valuable for them. But in a real baseball context, like, yeah, this guy might be a low end role player. And again, like, that's fine. It's not what you want out of a $4 million international guy.
Right.
And it's unlike the Phils to behave that way. Like, typically under Sal Agostinelli, they spread it out. They get a bunch of up the middle guys for six figures. And then, you know, some of them pan out, like Freddie Galvis and Cesar Hernandez, who, boy, Cesar Hernandez would be nice to have on the team right now, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
And then, like, he'd be the best defensive infielder on the team, and all that Gene Segura money could just go to the pitching.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he's hitting for power this year, too, which is crazy.
I know. This isn't ridiculous. And well, I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at the Cleveland roster. I'm going through, looking at everyone's 40-man crunch, right? I'm just like, oh, Cleveland, I think there's a chance Cleveland non-tenders him. Because they just have Tyler Freeman, who's going to have to be put on the 40-man, who's a almost exact like carbon copy of Cesar Hernandez, but for like $4 million less, and that's Cleveland's MO, is just to do stuff like that. Like, this is the thing that, like, again, it's the way the game is. The new CBA maybe will change it too again, but the way these teams are thinking is totally different. They're just view the, you know, the top of the player population with your stars one way, and then as you get closer to the middle, they're a whole lot less willing to pay those guys now. And, you know, I don't know. I think that the Phillies have kind of like a top-heavy roster where, like, guys like Gene Segura are making a lot of money and comparable players on other teams are not. And that just allows them to be like, oh, okay, well, now we have to fix a problem. Let's throw money at it. Like, the Dodgers just do this.
Yeah.
Their owners just go, yeah, here, dig into the couch cushions and then give $10 million to Blake Treinen. And then our development group will give him the best slider in baseball. Like, Blake Treinen was non-tendered.
Yeah.
They took a $10 million gamble on him. No other team can do that.
Yeah.
And now his slider is maybe like the dirtiest pitch on the planet because of their dev group. Like,
yeah,
this is the type of stuff that it takes to, you want to ring. Like, it's this stuff.
That's how you
and
do
it's
it.
Really hard. It's so hard to, like, I know it's the way I said it makes it sound so easy, but like, it feels impossible to expect all but a couple teams to be able to do this type of thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And the Phillies, you know, the Phillies have the money to do it. So let's see it now.
Let's see it now. I love it. I think that's you're really hitting on something important here, Eric, and hopefully this team is starting to figure some things out, and they get some folks in there who know how to bring these guys along, because you're right, there's an opportunity there with the bankroll this team has to be able to make some of that stuff happen. And folks, Eric and the rest of the folks over at Fangraphs, as all these trades are going down, they're updating their rankings and all the different farm systems around Major League Baseball, and you know, of course, Eric's tweeting his thoughts about some of these deals as they're going down. So make sure to follow him on Twitter if you're not already, at Longenhagen. Read everything that Eric is doing over at Fangraphs. Go to fangraphs.com/prospects. Eric, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on anytime.
Well, one final note before we wrap up. It's time for our stat of the week, and actually two stats of the week from our good friend Schmeckman, the stat guru at The Good Fight. Follow him on Twitter, by the way, at TGP Schmenk, which is spelled TG, I'll just give you the whole thing, at TGPSCHMENK. If you're wondering, if you're, you know, you need it spelled out for you, just hit my Twitter timeline. I think I retweeted something of him, or quote tweeted something, that he put out, here on Wednesday. But two things about the Phillies: as they sit here on Wednesday night with this game canceled or postponed against the Nationals, they sit at 50-50 on the season. They are, you talk about the 500th team of all time. They are 29-29 when Wheeler, Nola, or Eflin make a start, and 21-21 when anybody else starts a game. They are 30-20 at home and 20-30 on the road. They are 44-44 in the first half of the season, 6-6 in the second half of the season. They are 26-26 against the National League East, and 24-24 against everyone else. What is going on around here? And the Phillies have the fewest average games away from 500 so far this season. So this takes a look at the most 500 teams in baseball. The Phillies, on average, have been 0.79 games away from 500, which essentially means they've been right at the 500 mark basically the entire season. I think I saw someplace they've never been less than four games under 500 and never more than four games over 500 so far this season. They have been trapped in this glass case of 500 emotion all season long. The Blue Jays are the next closest at 1.03, followed by the Mariners at 1.13, and the Braves at 1.13, and the Reds at 1.24. So this is the most milquetoast average baseball team in Major League Baseball here in 2021. Is that enough for John Middleton to go over the luxury tax and allow Dave Dombrowski to make some actual moves? We'll see over these next 36 hours and however long it is when you get around to listening to this podcast. So that's going to do it for episode number 491, but we'll have another episode coming your way tomorrow on Friday morning. I'm going to talk to Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News and Eno Saris of the Athletic for all the trade deadline chatter you could possibly want to get your hands on. It's going to be a big podcast, so make sure you stick around for that one. Again, don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season for that. And don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed, just in case the Phillies do something this week. Make sure they subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is they get their podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time, which is tomorrow on Hittin' Season.